There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to another episode of In My Spikes podcast. Today I'll be speaking to Chris Miles and Jimmy Mullins. These guys have been helping me with the strength component of our program, and we met back all the way in 2019, just after the RWIF World Championships in Doha. I would be discussing with them the strength program that we run, the idea of excellence and how that becomes pretty lonely, the effect of high intensity training, as well as how important is effective communication in a coach and athlete relationship, and just more having a general conversation and catching up. I haven't actually caught up with these guys face to face or over the phone since I left Melbourne, so I'm looking forward to this conversation and hope you enjoy it. So, Jimmy Mullins, how you doing, man?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Not too bad. And yourself, Chris?
I'm good, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, not bad at all. So today I just wanted to speak to you guys about basically since we met. I mean, if we take it back to 2019, Joe and myself, I think we rocked up to Empower. I think I was hobbling. I had a groin injury. Joe must have had a quad injury.
Yeah, he had his quad.
Quad, yeah. And we expressed our interest to train with you guys. You go first, Chris. Like, what were you guys thinking?
I mean, I think the first sort of idea we had, I think Jimmy come to me one day and he goes, Chris, I got a proposition for you. And I'm like, all right, what's going on? And he goes, we've got the interest of that 2 800 meter runners. And I'm like, okay, sweet. He goes, but they're trying to get to the Olympics. And I'm like, okay. So what's the guy? He goes, well, obviously want to train him, but I want you to help me. I'm like, sign me up, like straight away. Like, no doubt about it. I think Jimmy and I probably would have reacted the same way in the sense that taking it up on our own would have been very daunting. I think two high level athletes like yourselves, we didn't know anything about you guys, you and Joseph, but I think, yeah, we felt like we knew our stuff, but having the responsibility of taking two world-class athletes on by ourselves would have been a big task. So to this day, I'm still grateful to Jimmy for bringing it up to me and letting me come on board. So I'll let you take it away, Jimmy.
Yeah, it was funny. It was funny how it happened because I was like training mainly basketball players, but Tat was in there. And Tat's mates with Joe. And then Joe rocked up. I think you were overseas or something, Pete. And Joe rocked up with one of his mates, and they were just sussing out the gym. And he's just, you know, as he is, he's just laughing and stuff. And he's just like, man, this place looks sick. And then Jacko was like, why don't you train with him? He's the speed king. And I'm like, oh, I don't know, man. I was already elite 800 meters. And then, like, literally, like, a week or two later, Joe's like, I think he messaged Jacko and said, yeah, I want to train. And Jacko's like, hey, Joe messaged he wants to train with Pete. And I'm like, all right. Suss Pete out. I'm like, far out, man. Like, this is next level. Like, I don't want to interfere with their training, what they're already doing at the VIS, because I thought you guys were still at the VIS. And then we found out that you weren't there. And as soon as I found out that you weren't really there anymore, I was like, all right, I'm probably going to get some help doing this as well. And then I go up to Chris, and as Chris just said before, like, he was pretty much straight on. I'm like, yeah, you know, we got these two high-level runners, but they're Olympians, man. Like, do you want to do it? And straight away, like, yep. we just like, all right. And then we got you boys in for that little interview. Like, I think, Pete, you were trying to suss us out a little bit. And then
I had no idea where I was.
Yeah.
Joe didn't really tell me where we're going. He said, there's this gym. So, and I was driving. So we're driving to Impala.
Oh, yeah.
And and then I see you guys, and then you guys have your laptop look professional, and but I like the vibe, and yeah. I wasn't trying to suss you guys out, you know. I don't have much experience in the gym myself, but when I came in, I was just like, yeah, this is, especially after the after having that little meeting and sitting down, man, I was ready to go. You know, there was trust straight away because you guys seem just so passionate about what you're doing. So I figured you guys would learn as you go, and we would learn as we go. So, and the main thing that you guys wanted to, so I was just like, yeah, sign me up. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think just on that point as well, I think as I alluded to before, like Jimmy and I have both obviously done our studies and whatnot, but to get the chance to actually train high-level athletes like yourself and Joe, I think it's the chances are few and far between. So, yeah, you'll get your local-level athletes or your semi-pros, but to have someone that is on the world stage and literally one and two in Australia, the chances of that happening are very slim, whether you're in a professional sporting club or at the VIS or out on your own. I think, yeah, like I said, it's a very rare opportunity. So taking it on was a no-brainer. And like I said, I think we had the knowledge of theoretically what to do, but applying it and making sure everything was enjoyable, like we had fun doing it as well, I think that was a huge thing for us as well.
That was huge. That was the main thing. Like, I mean, especially our Instagram stories, it looked like we're just having fun.
I think
as soon as the phones went down, we were lifting, like we were just having so much fun. I remember I enjoyed coming to the gym like for the first time, and I mean, we only had it twice a week, and I used to miss the gym quite a bit, and so did Joe obviously, and you guys just made it fun. It was a culture that you guys established.
And
the communication was awesome too. Like, I think we built trust pretty fast. There was respect, and you guys had the instructions there. And speaking about that, how important is it to establish that early relationship, you know, effective communication with the athlete and coach? Because I feel like that was super important.
Yeah, it's massive, man. I actually think that's like a major deal breaker with coaches, and where a lot of coaches go wrong. I see it all the time. You can't see this type of job as a job. It's not just like, all right, you're in for the hour, or whatever the time may be. And then once you're in that block, a lot of coaches, they're just sort of like in with the next one. You know what I mean? And they're not creating a friendship or like a good rapport with any athlete coming in. And almost they act like they don't care. So I think for coaches, in order to do well, one of the major things like is just creating a good friendship with the athletes coming in. You know, it's not just you're just a coach. You want to be like a good friend with them as well.
Yeah, and then also, Chris, I think you guys established trust pretty early. I don't think I've ever looked at a workout and like doubted or anything. And it wasn't because I didn't know much. I don't know how you guys did it, but it just felt like, you know, you got your instructions on point and you explained every workout, like to the point that, you know, this is the purpose for it. And what I liked about you, Chris, was you drilled this power of intent into us every single time. Like, you got to do it with intent to the point that I think we're doing everything with intent. Like, I'm just going for a walk, you know, it's like walk with intent. You know, it's pretty cool that kind of transferred over to other things in life.
Yeah, I think the idea of intent, I think that comes from, like, I was no high-level athlete myself. I swam as a kid, and I did okay, but I was never going to make it professional, high-level or whatnot. But I think at the time, especially if you love the sport and you want to do well in it and have a good coach, I think what I got drilled into me at a young age was train the way you want to play or train the way you want to compete. And especially with something like swimming, which is probably similar to your running, it's an individual sport. Yeah, you have your team around you and your support, but at the end of the day, it's you and the track or you and the black line. And if you're not training with intent, then you're just wasting your time. And especially in something like the 800, where I think we've worked out pretty well, 0.1 of a second can make a massive difference, whether that's off the blocks or whether you're pulling up early at the line. Like, those little things matter. So if you're drilling that in training, I think it just becomes second nature, and then you're 9 times out of 10 going to drill it in your sport as well. So, yeah.
And also there was in 2019 when I came back, I think I came back from World Champs with a groin injury, and there was this, my manager speaks about this pop you were missing, you know, like, you know, I wasn't springy. And I think he watched me do a stride and he said, you look like you could only run about 48 seconds, which is pretty terrible, especially if these guys are going out. You know, some of the heats or semifinals are going out in like 49. I think one of them was in like 48. Like, you're kind of done there. And Jimmy, what's your vertical?
Oh, that's not as high as what it was. Standard good muscle, but yeah, like the max I got tested for was 43 inches, so it was pretty decent. Like that's pretty
pretty.
I can jump over. I'm 6 foot, and he can clear me with ease.
Pretty decent. So. And that's the first thing we did, and I like that because the first thing we did, I think, was a testing of, like, I think how high we could jump and the power we could, you know. And we never tested again, but, you know, there was, I could already feel, you know, like 6 months later, I'm like, man, I can dunk again, you know, because I was missing that. And for me to perform well, I needed that power. I needed that spring. And what was the first thing that we had to do to get that back, Jimmy?
Oh, it was like your low-level plyometric work, I think it was, because just creating that stiffness through the foot. And obviously we couldn't do anything that was too intense because we're battling with injury, and we're trying to sort of create a program that would work well for you and for Joe as well. And we kind of noticed that in both you guys. So just that sort of lower level plyometric work, even though you do quite a bit of it on the track, there was a few exercises that we noticed that you were lacking that stiffness. So we'd, even though it wasn't a super intense exercise, it was challenging for you guys. So we sort of attacked that and, yeah, made sure that you were strong through that foot, ankle, and calf. And then, yeah, we saw major improvements from there.
And I think that's what Jimmy and I did relatively well. Like, we sat down for a few times a week before you guys even came in and chatted to us. And then when we knew the extent of your injuries, yours and Joseph's, what they were and how bad they were and your history, I think we sat down and said, the first thing we want to do is get these guys strong, address their injuries, make sure that we're moving them through ranges that are relevant to their sport, but also getting them strong and robust overall. And then once we address the strength issues that may have attributed to your injuries, and then introduced you to that light plyo work, I think Jimmy and I pretty much on the same day just said, yep, they're ready to go next week. Rejig the program up a little bit and let's send it a little bit. So yeah, and I think the communication between Jimmy and I and setting all that up was vital as well.
Yeah. Was there any communication? Well, I actually don't know this. Was there any communication with Justin too?
Yeah, we called. We actually called Justin. We called Justin sort of before you guys come in, and we asked him what he thinks as well. Because the whole thing was new to us all, so we didn't know Justin, and we just met you boys, and we actually spoke to another person as well, your previous physio, and we just wanted to sort of get information from everybody, and sort of come up with a picture in our head. All right, like, where do we think we can sort of fit into this program, and sort of work, create something that's going to work well and complement everything else that you're doing, because we knew that you were running quite a bit. So that's what we're trying to get from Justin, sort of how much volume in that. And yeah, like I said, what he thinks that you need. And Justin was really good, man. Like, he's just like, you know, you guys are, because sometimes coaches, they want to sort of tell you what to do, even though you know what you're doing. They almost think that they know it all. And Justin's not like that. Justin's really humble. And he basically told us, look, I think they might need this, but you guys are the coaches. You know, I've got full trust in you guys to come up with something that's going to help them out. And, you know, and he just basically told us that you guys skip the gym a bit, and just to like sort of, you know, tell you guys how important it is for you to do that sort of stuff. So, yeah, and every now and then we'd give him a buzz, give him a call, and just sort of see how you guys were doing and how you're performing in training. But then we'd also get that feedback from you. So once we saw everything was working, we didn't really feel the need to keep calling all the time or anything like that. I think we only made a few phone calls. Yeah.
Yeah, on skipping the gym a bit, I think that's actually credit to you guys, because I don't actually remember missing the gym too much with you guys. Mainly when I was in Perth or sometimes like that, but I'd flick you guys a message for workouts and stuff like that. So I think that's credit to you guys and the culture you kind of built. Like when we walked into Empower, it was just this culture that we've never had before, and just felt fun to get there. So like establishing that culture was key, and part of establishing that culture, I think, was laying out expectations. I don't think we set ourselves really high goals. I think when we came in, we just said we wanted to go to Olympics.
Again, I think I recall this pretty well. I think you mentioned saying, I want to get to the Olympics. This is the time I want to run. And I can't remember whether it was Jimmy or I, but you said, I want to run a 144 or something like that. And we're like, why not 143?
Yeah.
Like, I suppose, not that we're runners or super knowledgeable on that sport ourselves, but I suppose we can have an idea of what certain expectations can be. And we're like, why put that ceiling on it? Why not take that extra second off? And I think you proved you got pretty close, despite all the chaos going on in the world with lockdowns and the virus and everything. So you got pretty close to that. And I think had everything run as smoothly as we hoped, as it probably would any other year, I mean, who's to say you wouldn't have got there? So,
And what was your goals? You guys we had our own separate goals, obviously. What was your goals
at the time?
Because it's so new.
Yeah. We just wanted to make sure that you guys get to where you want to be. You know, and actually be competing in the Olympics. Injury free was massive for us.
The first thought that went through my head is like, shit, I hope we don't injure these guys. Like, I just want them to be healthy. If we can get them a bit stronger and get them a bit more elastic, I'm happy. So, but the first thought was like, keep them healthy.
Yeah. When you guys, I mean, it's not like, you know, you can do all this crazy stuff in the gym, but it doesn't mean anything if you guys aren't on the track. So as Chris mentioned earlier, addressing those weaknesses and those injuries was massive for us, and making sure that you guys felt well enough and robust enough to be able to compete whenever. And the feedback from you guys saying, you know, our bodies feel really good, that motivated us a lot as well. But yeah, for me, the major goal was just getting you guys there and, you know, running the best time possible. That was massive.
And how do you deal? We had us. Joe and I went perfect, obviously, but we knew what we wanted to do. We came in, we had our own goals. We knew where we wanted to go. How do you deal with athletes that you have to kind of motivate to do things?
That happens quite a lot, trying to motivate some athletes, because, you know, you get a wide range of athletes coming in. I mainly train basketball players, and there's some basketball players that are really motivated to start with, and you know, sometimes they come in and they're real flat and they think that their future's done, and you just have to let them know most of the time that, especially if they're younger, because I mainly train younger people, even in their 20s, I just got to let them know that they still have time on their side, and not to put too much pressure on themselves. Because if you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself, it's you're probably going to go one way, and that's backwards, because you can't focus properly or anything like that, and you can't see your goals, or you're creating almost like impossible tasks to reach. It's like, break things down, you just have to sit down with them and chat with them and let them know that, you know, not everything's going to go perfect for them. So just do what you can. A big quote that I'm a fan of is like, do what you can with what you have where you are. And just letting them know that you're going to have your good and your bad days. But as long as you can try and average out more good, then you're probably going to, it's more like a two steps forward, one steps back type of approach. And that sort of gets, for me, that's sort of gets guys going in the right direction.
Yeah. Then Chris, do you think as a strength conditioning coach, then your job kind of has to be play a little bit of the mental coach side as well?
Oh, 100%. I think whether you're Gen Pop, a rehab patient, or a high-level athlete, I think the role of the coach in the gym is creating that rapport and then making sure that your athlete or your client is mentally there as well. And I noticed that straight away with you. And I think that's the difference between someone who is a relatively good athlete and then someone that's going to get to your level. It's definitely got to do with their mentality and their attitude. I don't think you came into one session miserable or feeling flat. And if you did, you switched it on.
It's because I wasn't drinking coffee.
Yeah, I remember that actually. Bit of a caffeine addict you are, but as we all are in Melbourne. But yeah, like I think once you got warmed up and realized or remembered why you're there and what you want to achieve, you were able to switch it on straight away. And you'd probably be a bit quieter in between sets and between exercises on those flat days, but you knew when it's time to work, we work. I think that's the biggest thing. And it's not, I suppose, our job to necessarily make you switch on. It's our job to help you get there if you are struggling on that day. But I think that's where we both bounce off each other, because I've had days where I don't want to be in the gym coaching. Like I just want to be laying in bed and resting and whatnot. But then you remember why you're there. You have someone like you walk in and it makes the job fun. It makes the job exciting. And you realize you're there for a purpose and you need to work together to create the outcome. So.
And when COVID hit, there was another challenge there, because, I mean, you didn't have access to gyms and stuff. And, I mean, you guys are going through it now. And I think you guys moved more to online coaching. I think, Jimmy, you're saying you do what you can with what you have. So, like, in that instance, how do you still keep guys motivated and get them to do workouts?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to keep them motivated, that's for sure. But you know, I'm still sending out online programming for everyone that wants it. Most of the time it's body weight programming, and you got to make things like fun for them. You know what I mean? You can't just have them doing the same old routine. So, you know, just changing your program to maybe even add something as simple as like a small little game or a little task that you think is challenging for them, but they're gonna be excited that they've achieved that goal or that task. Just adding those small things into the program makes a massive change and gets them motivated. And just adding in different things that they've never done before. You know, it doesn't have to be anything too fancy, but if they've never really experienced it before and you've given them a little challenge or a little task for them to complete, once they finally achieve it, it sort of gets the wheel turning, you know. And then they're excited to keep going, but inevitably they are going to find flat spots. So just doing what you can to keep them motivated. Just like, you know, that's just one technique you can do. Sometimes they just need a talking to. You know, sometimes just me. I'll message my guys and just ask them like how they're going, because I know a lot of people are actually flat at the moment. So just checking in on them and checking in on their mental health. Not everything is about working out. So just seeing how they're going, that can get them motivated too, because then it shows that, you know, you care about them. You're not just their coach. Like I said before, for me, coaching is more about friendship as well. It's not just, you know, I'm just doing my job just because it's my job. I generally care about everyone that comes in, so I'll make sure that I message them, see how they're going. And a lot of the time the response is good, because they're like, oh, you know, I've been feeling flat. And then you just give them, you know, whatever pep talk you can, just you know, trying to be a good friend. And then next time he messaged them, you know, I had one guy, he's like, yeah, I'm a lot more optimistic after what you've told me, and he has a better view now. So some people just need a little talking to like that, while others might just need just a program to keep them going. You know what I mean? It's different for everybody.
Yeah, because there's so much benefit to having you guys there. I think I remember heading to Perth, and, you know, you're excited. You know, I'm motivated. You're excited to do the workout. And then you get there, you're like, oh, man. You know, it's just different. I don't know why. Like, sometimes when I came to the gym with you guys, and I'm feeling a bit flat. But as soon as we kind of get warming up, it's like, all right, let's go. We're ready. But in Perth, man, I get there sometimes, and then sometimes I just work out. I just walk back out.
And I think it's important to understand that happens as well. Not every workout's going to be great. You're not going to be hitting PBs every workout, and sometimes you just need a break. So not feeling deflated at the fact that, you know what, today's not my day. I'm going to just walk out, have a rest, come back tomorrow and try again. There's benefits in that too, because sometimes you can push yourself through a workout and you're just going to feel worse for it. And I think with everything going on with COVID and everything right now, one of the things I think I found is important is making sure you communicate that you're shifting the focus, because not everyone has access to a gym. Not everyone has equipment at home to do squats and deads and bench press and whatnot. So shifting the focus from like, okay, we're not going to be doing the big lifts now because we can't. So we're going to work on these little things. So it might be a niggling injury that you've had where you could do some body weight exercises and change your biomechanics a little bit and fix that. So making sure that there's a clear communication between coach and athlete as well, to make sure that they're like not focusing on what they can't do and refocusing to what they can do and what they can achieve with what they've got, as Jimmy said before. So
I don't know if you guys watched The Drum last week, and we were discussing, I think, this idea of excellence, but we didn't go into, like, I think another idea was excellence can get lonely at times. I think it is kind of lonely sometimes, you know, like right now when I'm in Europe away from my family and stuff like that, then how far would you have to go to achieve that type of excellence, and how do you even get there?
It's interesting, man. Like, it's actually pretty true, you know. You hear all the time, the path to success is a lonely one. And I guess just having that self-belief that you can make it, and just trying to stay in touch with you know, as you said, you're traveling, it makes it tough. So just trying to get some support from your network, whoever that may be, and just really have that, just try and find some self-belief and have confidence in what you're doing, because a lot of the time people ask, like, why are you doing that, and or what are you doing?
People don't understand.
They don't get it. It's just something I call it. I have this conversation quite a bit, actually, and I call it the championship mindset. I've touched on it a little bit sometimes on Instagram. I speak about it. And it's just things that people don't understand, and you're doing things that most people wouldn't to get to a destination that most people can't. And a lot of that comes from that mindset of doing things that people won't. So if you're doing things that people won't, obviously it's gonna be a lonely road.
Yeah.
They don't get it. It's the same with business. Like, I'm big on business, and you know, I'm trying to do my own thing at the moment. Some people look at me like, well, why are you doing that, or why you work so much and all that? They don't understand. And that's fine.
Do you feel the need to justify it to them?
No, like, initially I did, like when I was a little bit younger, I did, but now I get it, you know, like you see some results, and you just have to find that will within yourself, and just remember your why and why you're doing it. Like sort of what we touched on earlier, just remember why you're doing it, and that can sort of keep that wheel turning and keep you going and keep you motivated. And it's all right to feel flat every now and then, But when you're really down, just remember why you're doing it, and hopefully it starts to get that wheel turning.
It's that cliche saying as well, I think, and it, as cliche as it is, it's true. It's if it was easy, everyone would do it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So that doesn't just come down to your physical attributes. Like Pete, you're built for running, so it gives you a bit of an advantage. But you don't become number one in Australia and number four in the world by just being talented. You've obviously put in the work. You've made the sacrifices necessary to get there and beyond. And I think that's true in sport, in business, and just life in general. I mean, there's a reason only three people in the world that are businessmen have gone to space. Not everyone's going to be a Jeff Bezos because not everyone wants to make those sacrifices and put in that work. So,
Okay. And then there's this idea of like, we always chase the 1%, 1%, 1% as athlete. But do you think sometimes it's probably just need to do things more efficient, the things you're already doing, rather than before chasing those 1%? Like for us, I don't think we need to go chase 1%. We just need to find a gym that we could work at properly. Because, I mean, we still have that gym we need to get good at before going chasing another 1%. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, what's the saying? Like you're stepping over dollars to pick up pennies. You know, if you're not doing the major things, if we're talking training, if you're not doing the big things, like sleeping well is massive. That's huge for most people. Most people aren't sleeping well. So if you're not doing that, you're not eating, you know, pretty well, and you're not training consistently or properly, then there's no point trying to do all this fancy stuff. It's usually when it comes to recovery and all that sort of stuff, or wearing fancy shoes or things like that. You know, there's no point doing that. There's no point doing those or chasing those 1%, especially if you're not hitting the big things first. You know.
Yeah. Consistency is the biggest one, I think. If you're not hitting the big things consistently and putting in that work, then the 1%ers won't mean anything.
No.
And our strength program, how does it work? I think we were doing about 5 to 6 weeks, and then we taper.
It was four to five, from memory.
Four to five?
Yeah.
How did you guys develop? Like, why 4 to 5?
It's
I mean, it worked. I just never asked questions around it. It was working.
It's based around your comps.
I think we worked backwards from his first comp, right? So we looked at the time of the comps.
When Pete and Joe, they hit us with the old, "Hey man, we're racing in 2 weeks."
That was a big challenge, because sometimes we just came out of nowhere and like, we're racing in 2 weeks, and then, I mean, we don't know your program is in advance or something, and you have to go back and change it.
Yeah.
So that was another big challenge. But we never knew when we were really competing.
Yeah.
It was just like, we're just competing there. And then how much do you guys have to taper us?
I think that was the biggest thing. We saw your schedule for your main races, and we worked backwards with the dates and the waves of the program, or the blocks. And so we knew, okay, so from 12 weeks from now is when he's got his first major comp. So we worked in 4 week blocks, because we thought maybe six was too intense. These guys have done the gym before, but they've never trained the way we're going to train them before. So we had a idea of wanting to make sure we had a mutual understanding of what we expected of you, technically wise, and strength wise. And we thought the 4 week blocks would work well with that, I suppose. But then, like you said, it kind of gave us room to adjust things if we needed to as well, because all of a sudden in 2 weeks we've got a race. So we knew we could immediately taper you guys to make sure you guys were ready for that.
Yeah. Justin believes that speed should be done all year round. So our program kind of stays the same on track. Like, we do speed all year round. How important is it to do strength all year round as well? Like, is there a time where you just you know, the off season where you don't pick weights, or is that the time where you actually pick the heaviest weights?
I've always said, I think weight training should be done all year round. Just a matter of how you program it. So anytime I hear a footballer come to me and be like, yeah, I'm not doing legs during the season, my question is why?
Yeah.
And then you wonder why all these guys, especially at like a semi-pro and a local level, why are they coming with ACL injuries, hamstring injuries, calf injuries? Because they're doing all this running, but they haven't built up that conditioning in the gym to make sure they've maintained that strength. And for me, strength is the biggest thing in reducing the risk of injury. And also maintaining that, as you alluded to, that pop off the blocks or that spring in your step. If you're not doing that work in the gym, you're not going to maintain that on the track or on the field. So,
yeah, if you're smart about it, like for me, it all depends. You know, if you should take some time off or not. I actually, believe it or not, I force guys sometimes to take time off. And like I said, it depends. It depends on the individual and their training background and their experience and things like that. But when I would force guys off, it's when they're doing too much, you know. And as I've mentioned like 10 times already, I train a lot of basketball players. And basketball players and lots of athletes in general, they're just like, the more work I do, the better I'm going to get, when really they just need to relax a little bit. So when guys come to me, if they're a bit more experienced and they come in and they haven't taken any time off weights at all, like none, I haven't had a deload at all, they haven't been trained, let's say, by Chris and I, and haven't had a relatively good structure to their program, I'll tell them to take a couple of weeks or even like a month off weights. But that's the extreme. Like, it's pretty rare that I'll have to do that. But yeah, apart from that, as Chris mentioned, most of the year, off season, they might have a couple of weeks off, but then try to build that strength back up.
It just it comes down to smart programming, I think. Yeah, you're not expecting to hit PBs every week. And you shouldn't be, as someone whose sport isn't solely focused on the gym as a powerlifter or an Olympic weightlifter. We've got to remember that what we do for you in the gym is supplementary to your running training. So we're there to assist that and make that better. We're not your sole focus to get better in the gym.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Speaking of PBs, let's talk about PBs. What did we come in at? I can't even remember. Especially squats. I felt like we got strong very quickly, but
I reckon still have the numbers there somewhere on the on the Excel spreadsheet. But you guys came in pretty I'm gonna say like
inexperienced
below. but you know, being so explosive as well, like, you guys are very explosive. It's not like he's a weak by any means, you know. You're high level athletes, you're going to be strong. We it probably helps that Justin, as you just said, Justin does high speed work throughout most of the year, because when you're sprinting and stuff, that's going to help a lot with strength maintenance, or if you're inexperienced, just getting you strong in the first place. So you came in at like a reasonable base, but definitely like from what we thought you might have been at. You had some improvements to be made, but I don't know the numbers now. I don't know the numbers, but
I think our dead started at about 80 kilos. Your trap bar,
that's the trap bar. That's
Trap
bar. You still got that photo. You guys are like shirtless with the
shirts off Fridays.
The trap bars.
Shirts off Fridays.
It's like when you hit the 100 for the first time or something like that. But now you guys would blow that out of the park, man. You guys have developed a lot. And that's not just through one or two sessions. That's credit to you guys coming in consistently and putting in the work, you know. Doesn't happen overnight.
And what do you think we have to look forward to, you know? I mean, now that you know, it's been like almost 2 years now. So like, what's expectations going forward?
I think getting you back in Australia and back in the gym is the first yeah. the first goal.
Seeing it will be nice, you know.
Yeah, I'm excited just to get a good. I'm excited just to get a good training block where making sure you're ready for a race in a couple of weeks isn't on our minds. Making sure that you guys can get a good couple of months in of just hitting the gym hard, not worrying about the fact that you're a little bit tired going doing your running stuff, because Jimmy and I know that once we start to taper you down and get you ready for a race, you're just going to go through the roof with your speed. You're going to feel better. You're going to feel fitter. You're going to feel springier. So I think that's what I'm looking forward to. And I don't see why you can't break into the 143s by this time next year.
Yeah. Yeah. That from watching your race, your race is over in Tokyo. Looks like you can definitely get there. So that's probably a big goal for us. Again, just making sure that you guys are healthy, and as Chris mentioned, prepared for any race that's coming up. Hopefully we can limit the amount of injuries that you guys have, and hopefully it's a relatively smooth sailing from here. That would be awesome. But we all know that there's a
I think what I'm excited about too is just getting you and Joseph together in the room again. We've spent the last couple of months just training yourself. So I enjoyed seeing the friendly competition you two had together, the banter, whether it be doing our dead ball tosses for high hit the ceiling or
I'm bringing in a PlayStation 5.
Oh no. Just so you can kick my ass at FIFA again.
I know, I think I beat Chris like 6.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Look, I'll tell you the score because I was there for all three games. And the first one was 5-0. The second one was 7-0. And the third one, I think, was like 9-0, man.
He doesn't have my PBs down, but he's got all the stats down for that game.
I forgot. Yeah, I've got the FIFA stats. Chris kicked 2 goals like over those 3 games, but
it wasn't great.
There was one
don't want to play Joseph. Yeah. Joseph is even worse. that's one guy you don't want to play.
No, worse is in better.
Yeah, is in better. Yeah,
that's why I think he said like, oh, you want to play FIFA? I just handed the controller over to Chris. I'm like, yeah, Chris will play.
I was sweating hard. I was so nervous.
I wouldn't even know what the pass button is.
Yeah, I suppose a question from myself as well, Pete. I just wanted to touch on your experience before you came to Empower with the gym. What you were doing beforehand, what changed when you came to see us in terms of your program and exercise prescription and whatnot, and what changed in your mentality to make you so consistent with it as well?
I think the main thing is I got away with so much talent that I didn't feel the need to do a lot of things, but there was a lot of inconsistencies in the gym. I'd get injured and act like I don't know why, but you know, I knew why. I had like a stress fracture. I probably knew why I got a stress fracture. You know, just didn't have that strength. You know, we look strong, but sometimes you do have to pick up those weights. And the main thing is I like doing things I enjoy. So not that I didn't enjoy gym, but it was just a different culture coming with you guys. It was everything. Like, it was just focus. It was fun. It was, you guys were hungry. You guys just, like, I think I came in one day and I think it was you, Jimmy, you were reading something on like athletics, and I'm like, man, I don't even read that stuff, you know? And
a textbook, man. I'm big on
Something like that. Or an article or something. Like
Yeah.
And then Chris, you just say, you know, do things with intent. Like, I try to lift some things like, okay, do it again, you know, because intent was the main thing. It just made it fun. Yeah. It made the gym go so fast that you didn't even realize, you know, sometimes you're looking forward to go to the gym rather than before. It's like, oh man, not gym. You know, when you have that thought, you miss it every now and then, and it adds up pretty quick.
Yeah. I reckon there was days where you and Joseph were at the gym for a good 2.5 hours. We probably trained for an hour and a half, but just the banter that went on afterwards and the talking and the mingling, I think that showed a lot to how much you guys.
I think that was so important. That relationship was, like you were saying, Jimmy, I think that was so important. It's overlooked.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to have a great relationship with your coaches and you got to enjoy being there. So we really enjoyed being there. I think it was cool.
Yeah. You can't make the gym like an army, you can't be a drill sergeant to your athletes. Yeah. You know, maybe some need that, but from my experience, a lot of guys just are looking to enjoy it as well. They don't want to, you know, be drilled like, oh, just do this, do that, you know, and then I'm not going to talk to you. Because I know how stupid that sounds, but some coaches actually like that. So, like you were saying, if you can make the environment fun, enjoyable, and have good banter like that, then they're going to want to come in.
One thing that stood out to me with you guys too when you guys came in was just your ability as the athlete to not just get caught up in the laughs and the jokes that we would have in the warm-up or in between sets. Like as soon as Jimmy or I would say, okay, next set, like it was like you had multiple personalities. Like we'd go from dancing to the tunes in the background and trying to throw tennis balls through the rings and spinning Swiss balls on your finger and doing silly stuff like that and having a laugh to, all right, next set, switch it on and pull 140 on a trap bar and make it move quick. You know what I mean? Like there was never any sluggy sort of sessions. But every session was fun as well.
Yeah. You never forgot why you were there. You know, as fun as it was, we knew why you guys were coming in. You guys knew why you were coming in. So that was always the main focus. And it's good that you guys, it just shows, most higher level athletes can do that. They can flick the switch and just turn it on. And that's probably, as we were talking about before, that's probably a big difference maker between someone who's probably higher level and someone that might be on the edge or might not be able to make it. And as you mentioned, Pete, a lot of people try to rely on talent. You guys understand that it takes a lot more than that. You know, you've got to put in the work as well because talent will only get you so far. But then talent will probably get – you might be one of the best in the world just on talent, or you might be up there on talent. But, you know, if those other guys as well that are at the same level as you are putting into work, then you're just going to fall way behind. So it's good that you guys have that attitude, you know, to want to put in the work as well. And not just come in for fun and games. You could just flick of a switch, bang, and, you know, go into athlete.
And I remember how pumped you guys would get when we started competing. It was like when Joe and I were finishing 1-2 and we were running like 145s. And you guys were just so pumped. And then I guess my next question was, the experience of the Olympics, how was it watching it, obviously?
It was because
you guys played a big part in that journey.
It's emotional, man. It's emotional. When you see any of your athletes performing and performing well, you get emotional. You're like, wow, I'm so happy for them, and seeing what they're achieving right now. I don't think about any of it like, oh, you know, I helped do this, I helped do that. You're just sort of in the moment, and you're just like, whoa, they're performing like so well. like Chris and I were on the phone after two finals.
We had each other on speed dial.
Man, I was like running around the house after your semi-final. I was like running around the house like crazy. Sean's like, what's going on? And it was wild, man, because, you know, we were working on it for so long. It seems like we had so many setbacks and like with COVID and all that stuff. And just to see it happen. It was pretty emotional, man. I was just so happy for you and watching you do your thing. And it was unbelievable to watch.
I think, whether we meant to be like that or not, I think Jimmy and I both got super invested in your guys' success, to the point where it's like you achieving what you did almost made us feel like we achieved something too, especially being two guys that haven't had athletes at your level. It was reassuring to be like, after everything had settled, we looked at it and we're like, we helped with that. And I think that was just something we became very proud of. I mean, my phone blew up after your semifinal as if I was the one running. Everyone was congratulating me. I'm like, I did nothing compared to what this guy's done. Like, I helped him, but he had to do the work. He had to be there. He had to show up every day and he had to run the race. But it just goes to show how many people get invested in it too. Where I'm copying congratulations left, right, and center for your successes. So
yeah,
so you should be. So you guys should be though.
So it's humbling and exciting. And I think the biggest thing for me, I saw your family back in Perth, all crammed into that house, getting super excited, and the replay of them watching your race. I think that was the moment for me that I got quite emotional. I was like, I just couldn't believe it. I was in awe. It was amazing to watch. So,
yeah, wow, what a journey!
I got so emotional.
That's basically
that
all I needed to talk to you guys about.
Instagram.
Oh yeah, Jimmy blocked me on Instagram. And then he had the nerve to say you're not following me, because once you block someone, you automatically unfollow each other. He blocked me on Instagram.
I blocked him by accident. As if I'd block him on purpose. I was typing a message. I was typing a message saying it was about your semi-final. I think I was typing good luck, actually, for your final.
Yeah.
Just do your thing. And I wanted to get in early because I knew that your phone would be blowing up.
Yeah.
And, then someone at the gym comes in and was talking to me about you. And I'm just like, I put my phone in my pocket. And I blocked him. I was like, what? Because I went to find you and it's like, oh, you have to unblock this person to message him. I'm like, are you serious? I'm like, now he's not even going to see the message that I'm going to send. But just you saw that, it.
How are you handling the all the success? Because I remember Jimmy and I did a little bit of stalking of you and Joseph before you started. And one of the things was like, oh, Pete's got about 6,000 followers. That's huge. And then we looked at Joseph's, and Joseph was at about 20,000. And then just out of interest, after your final, I looked at your Instagram profile and you were pushing 50,000 followers. So how are you handling that fame?
Pretty good. I'm not one to get too overhyped about it, you know.
I would have guessed that.
It's just numbers, so it's cool. But I do embrace all the support that comes with it. The hard thing was replying to messages, because you know, especially through the rounds, it was pretty hard. Because through the rounds, you try to reply, and then a bunch come ahead, especially the request ones. That was really hard. And you know, messages come through left, right, and center. You know, emails or your phone or everything. And I just said, you know what? I have a 12-hour flight back to Europe. I'll reply to as many as I can on that flight and just purchase Wi-Fi. But other than that, it's pretty humbling, actually.
Yeah, I don't think I could scroll through Facebook for an hour without seeing your face pop up.
Oh, yeah, I was on Sportsbet.
Oh, Sportsbet. Every news article. Spag Bowl, that's what it was.
Hopefully comes with free coffee, so it's in my chat once I get back to Melbourne.
Sounds good.
Large cappuccino for me. Thanks, mate.
Large cappuccino. Give you a few of those. So, yeah, so thank you guys for being part of the journey, and I look forward to continue working with you. I think I'm pretty excited already for what's to come.
Yeah, it'll I'm nice. Pumped for you to get back, man, so pumped, it'll be good.
Just talking about it, man.
Yeah. We got big goals coming ahead.
Yeah, massive.
Yeah. I think it would be so fun. I just can't wait. Where are you now, Jimmy? Like, obviously, it's lockdown, but
Yeah. So I'm actually in the works of something that's like secret. I can't really say what it is at the moment. But
classified.
Yeah. It's classified, you know. You gotta get a security clearance for that one. But I'm just sort of looking for a location for what I'm doing. So at the moment, I'm still running my stuff out of Empower. When I can. So when we go back and open up, I'll just still be out of Empower. for the time being until I sort of get my own little thing up and running. And then, yeah, wherever that may be, I'll be there. It will still be sort of a similar area.
Yeah. And Chris?
Yeah. Just as COVID hit, I actually made the decision to leave Empower and open up a little powerlifting gym with a good friend of mine, Matthew Prosak. So he's, I'd say he's one of the best Australian powerlifting coaches going around.
So strong.
He coached me for a little bit when I decided to take up the sport and became a good friend of mine. And then we decided to open up a little powerlifting facility in Airport West. Probably not the best time to do it with everything going on, but we've made it work for now. And actually surprised we've come as far as we have with everything going on, with gyms being locked down and whatnot. So, yeah, just a little powerlifting gym out of Airport West. And similar to Jimmy, I think we'll eventually start looking at expanding that into something a little bit more versatile to cater for the likes of athletes like yourself. So not just powerlifters, but runners, basketballers as well. Just to make sure that there's a facility that caters to everyone as well as powerlifters. So, yeah.
Perfecto. That's perfect.
Can't wait. Can't wait to get back, guys. Yeah, I'll let you guys go. Thanks for your time. And I'll see you on the flip side, huh?
Hey, man.
Thanks for having
us, man. Yeah, man. Can't wait.
No, it's been so nice catching up. It's been dope.
Yeah, it's been
I think it's the first conversation we've had without Instagram messaging. So
without Instagram messages.
Yes, yes, it is.
And it's video too, so I can see you guys.
Yeah.
Jimmy looked like he got bigger.
Nah.
Still pumping weights.
Nah, I'm still the same weight. 103 kilos for anyone that wants to know.
Yeah, but I'll let you guys know when I'm back in town and in quarantine, probably need some workouts and when I get back.
Yeah, hit us up, man. Always happy to help.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great, man. Thank you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.